we have several questions. I'm going to try to go through them. I'm going to start with just piggybacking off of that, what you were talking about with dysgraphia and spelling. We have April asking, she has a 10-year-old that can read well, but spelling and writing is an issue. Could that possibly be dyslexia as well? And how can she figure that out?
So those are the tough ones. When people are seemingly reading well, but the spelling and writing are hard. So yeah, so that often sounds like dysgraphia. The question of dyslexia, or this in this case, it would definitely be stealth dyslexia, is understanding the level of writing relative to your child's cognitive ability. Mm-hmm. And within the reading, how well does she actually decode? How fluent is she? And what is her comprehension? And with the kids that are stealth dyslexic, we see a whole bunch of variability. Again, there's some kids that read fast, but they butcher so many of the words, and mm-hmm. they take the meaning out. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people who read super slow and super accurately, or pretty accurately, but that pacing, they can't keep up in school eventually with that pacing. So those are where we see sometimes these underlying stealth dyslexic processes. So you usually need to do a little at least screening to find that out. And then also for sure monitor over time to see how the challenges build up. And of course, we recommend when there's a concern, testing, you know, asking your school if they'll do some testing, which we know is hard if your child is doing fine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. Switching gears a little bit, kind of in the same vein, but not really. Tamara has a question about dyscalculia. Mm-hmm. How can parents start a similar movement to get more support for their kids with dyscalculia and ADHD? And dyscalculia is like a math disability. So specifically difficulty with numbers, math processes, things like that. How can they graduate if they fail at every test?
Let's start there. If kids are failing every test, there's something going on. Mm-hmm. And we need to back into what is going on. And we saw some terms there. So maybe there is identified dyscalculia. Maybe there is identified ADHD. It's working with the school to figure out a support plan. Because a lot of times, you know, sometimes it is not understanding the material, like in dyscalculia. And other times, if something's due to ADHD, it's you're distracted, you aren't getting done in time. And there's different ways with quiet settings, having a prompter. There are ways that children can be supported to get out what they know. Typically, these kind of problems happen when there are very little adjustments and very little school resources. And what happens is then parents are on their own to get the resources out of school, which these kids often need, but there needs to be a bridge to school so they can actually utilize what they're learning and have a way to get out what they know, what they truly know, in a format that works with their learning style so they don't fail. And it's a school's obligation to help kids not fail.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think one of the things that's really tough about math, when you have dyscalculia, there are all kinds, it's like with dyslexia, there are all kinds of pieces to that puzzle. One of them is generally really not understanding how numbers work. And we see that there's usually a comprehension component to that. It may be difficult for them to visualize how things really work and reason through it. And so often what happens with math is that like tutoring or support, they're trying to get them to memorize, to learn processes by rote, but these students don't understand what they're doing. Right. So sometimes they can get it right, sometimes they can get it wrong. They can't always tell if they got it wrong. And if they can tell, they don't know how to fix it because the issue is with the comprehension of how numbers actually work. And it may be with sequencing and with the processes, certainly all of that as well, but there's this root under there that a lot of times gets ignored in just trying to get the numbers right on the page. Mm-hmm.
Can I tell a quick story about this? It's a quick personal story. So I'm guessing that I've got this label too. It was never diagnosed. And at least a few of our kids do as well. Again, not diagnosed, but the symptoms. So when I always had math tutors all the way through school, and wonderful Mr. Moko. I'll always remember Mr. Moko. He was an engineer. He'd come in his tweed and he'd have his mints. He always had a great breath, and we'd work at the dining room table. And this was maybe 8th, 9th, 10th grade. And he would go over for 50 minutes, all of these very difficult math problems with me. And I had it by the end. He's like, okay, Danny, you got this? I'm like, I got this. He's like, okay, we've saved the last two for you. It's time for me to go. I'd walk him out of the dining room to the front door, say goodbye. I'd sit back down, and I had no idea what to do. It's just gone. That is what kids with dyscalculia generally experience, even though you've gone over it over and over. Fast forward to graduate school. So one of the first psychology major in college, one of the great things, no more math except one statistics class. I had a statistics tutor. I found a way to get through it. Graduate school in psychology. Too much statistics. The first few classes were so hard. Same experience. Tutors just trying to memorize it, just trying to get by. The last class of my last semester, my doctorate, which I saved for last, advanced multivariate statistics. And I saved it because I thought there's no way I'm going to get beyond this class. And like, I'm just done. So this professor, who was kind of like a Professor Snape looking guy who I'd only seen in the halls, comes in. And he says, so this is the advanced multivariate statistics, right? Like my nightmare. He says, I'm going to teach you all statistics like no one has ever taught you statistics before. I'm going to tell you why we do it, what it means, and how it works. And in the first 2 hours, I understood statistics. Mm-hmm. Because, and here's the dyslexia key for everything, if you can make the learning meaningful and contextual, the dyslexic mind soaks it up and never forgets it. If it's rote and based on memorization and symbols and sequences only, it will never stick for more than hopefully the overnight just to take the test.
That is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you know from your own experience, but we see that over and over and over and over.
We do. And that's really right. Absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, it's kind of dependent on, you know, the teacher understanding that. I mean, that's good teaching practice, like teach the whole and then you get into the parts. But it doesn't always happen. So we have lots of questions. So I want to kind of rapid fire through a lot of these. I know you have a lot more to share. So we have Marav, what would you say for a kid that won't try to read because she might feel that I'd rather be bad than stupid?
Well, I think what I would start with is trying to understand for her what stupid means. And this is where I peel apart intelligence from reading and really highlight what intelligence is and all the ways that she is smart and decouple it from reading. Then I'd want to figure out ways for her to read in a safe environment where she can make mistakes and not get feedback, which would reinforce the notion that she's stupid. So for example, for dyslexics, you know, one of the accommodations is not to be called on in class to read out loud, and also not to be called on when your hand's not raised, because you can end up feeling and looking, quote, stupid when you don't know what to say or how to say it. Mm-hmm. So again, part of it is, I think, decoupling what stupid and intelligence is to build up that part of her, like we were talking about earlier, the strength part, and then figure out a way where she can learn, she can practice reading in a safe way where she can start to take some risks.
Great advice.
And I will just give you a technique that you, all of you, can use with your kids that is simple and it allows them, you know, our dyslexic kids, they often love to be read to. It's not that they don't like stories or books. They just, the reading part is really hard. So if you pick something to read together that, you know, she's really excited about, or that maybe you've kind of read a bit of it so that you can say, oh, I'm so excited for us to read this together. Here's what it's about. So you're giving her that context, and then have her point under the word and you point above the word and you read slowly together. You are the guide. She has to read the words, but if she reads it a little bit after you, that's okay, because you're the guide. Just read slowly but fluently together. So even though you're going to slow it down, make it sound natural. And when you get to punctuation, tap twice. That kind of helps her to have a second to regroup, to think about, you know, the picture she's making in her mind. And if you do that, maybe for about 10 minutes a day, there actually are studies on this technique that show that it, you know, can increase reading level 1 to 2 levels in over time, a period of 7 hours. It's quite profound. But what it's doing is it's allowing her to see, say, touch, and hear the words accurately without the pressure of having to do it herself. And so it's imprinting, you know, words on her brain, noticing how it looks on the page, and getting the enjoyment together. And of course, you can use it for any kind of reading. But in her case, because she's really not wanting to have anything to do with reading, I would pick something really fun.
We love that technique in our centers, neurological impressed reading. We use it all the time. I do want to segue because of this question. It's kind of in the same vein. We have a student who we're working with and his mom that had a question related to the show that we hope that you can answer. What we're seeing now with kids going back to school in person is that the issue of bullying is coming up because, you know, they were at home, they were remote learning, and that might have been a hot mess behind the scenes, maybe, you know, with their own learning and, you know, all the independence that was required of them. But the other kids, a lot of times, couldn't see their struggles. And now that kids are back in the classroom, now, you know, these kids, they're so brilliant, they think differently, and they're struggling. So the other kids can see that they're struggling with reading or writing, and now they're being bullied. And so, Dr. Dan, what advice do you have for parents on how to help a child who's being made fun of or bullied because of their struggles with dyslexia?
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that. And I unfortunately do hear it all the time. It happens too often. So I'm thinking of a sort of a three-prong approach here. One is, and you might be doing this, so I just would reinforce it if you are. One is to have a talk to the teacher, call a school meeting immediately. Like it's an emergency school meeting. It's an urgent school meeting. Get anyone's attention who you need to, principal, whomever. And need to talk about the bullying. So like bullying is not okay. Bullying really damages kids. And it needs to be a school/classroom effort to reduce the bullying and come up with a plan for that, which can include a number of things, from understanding who the bullies are, from protecting the child from the events, at least in the classroom, that are going to elicit the bullying, whether it has it to, how it relates to the reading out loud or to writing or people correcting work. There needs to be a comprehensive, immediate, no tolerance plan. And really, I encourage you to hold the school accountable. The next part relates to how to help your child understand what's going on. And this is back to trying to counteract the negative messages while really trying to build him up on what his strengths are, his dyslexic strengths, his, the way he thinks outside the box, the way he creates and builds and invents, how interesting he is, the things that he knows. And I also recommend doing the online search of all of the famous dyslexics, particularly the ones that he will think are cool, because there are a lot of older ones that kids think are less cool. So there could be a positive identity to help him understand that these now people that he looks up to or people who did amazing things had the same struggles and also were teased and bullied. It's not okay, but that he can get through this with support. The third thing is to get some minimally school counseling, if not outside counseling, to help him understand and process what's going on and develop positive coping and a positive sense of himself, despite this negative environmental reaction that he's having.
That's great advice. Thank you so much. Yes. You know, it's the unfortunate kind of part of, you know, having these brilliant, gifted, and slightly outside the box kids. Marav is asking, if you feel that the dyslexia is visually based, where would you start with the diagnosis?
There's a few places to start. So where either where you're going to go first or second is to a developmental optometrist. And it's the developmental optometrists who are trained in looking at the visual processing and looking at things called like convergence insufficiency, saccadic movement dysfunction. There's all these terms, which basically means your eyes aren't teaming in different ways and can use some strengthening and sometimes some prescriptions. I also feel it's really, so that's the place you can go to see if there's visual processing issues right away, but they will not diagnose dyslexia. And that's why I think going to a center, going to a clinic, going to a licensed educational psychologist, a clinical psychologist, a neuropsychologist, asking the school to get a psychoeducational evaluation to really understand your child's overall profile is optimal, because the dyslexic brain has so many different strengths and challenges. There's a lot of little nooks and crannies that can really together be impacting. So that to me is the best place to start. But equally, I would say go to a developmental optometrist, because they could right away tell you if there are some underlying visual processing issues. You just won't get the dyslexia diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then piggybacking off of that, when we are talking about testing, Marissa says, teachers constantly tell me that my child is smart, that he can't spell and read, but if he was tested, he wouldn't qualify for an IEP. What's going on here?
Yeah, that goes back to what we talked about with stealth dyslexia or a smart dyslexic, because bright kids can generally perform to minimum grade criteria. Mm-hmm. And so the teacher might be accurate. I know that, you know, in our story with our son, by the time we, number two, when we knew the school well, they said in kindergarten, first grade, hey, he's not going to qualify yet. We're watching him. We're going to give him support. We know what's going on. And I think it was maybe second, or I don't know, maybe third grade that they actually tested him. And they're like, we think he'll qualify now. So they were actually doing us a favor in the qualification aspect, but we were already getting him the intervention, which is another sticky wicket, because that actually increases scores when there's still a dyslexia. Right. So the teacher might be accurate, but you still want to get him tested, right? You still want to get a baseline. You still want to see where he falls. You still want to use that free service. And if he doesn't qualify, you'll still understand where his profile are, what his profile is. And you can still come up with some sort of school plan, even if it's not formal, to support him, as well as understand what he needs outside of school.
Mm-hmm. And we see that all the time. Same journey. You know, the average age that parents usually come to us is when kids are about 9, 10, because that's when they, you know, will qualify in school. But parents know long before that something's going on. So we always say, trust your gut.
Yes.
Yeah. Pamela is asking thoughts on medication for attention if there is an ADHD component with a dyslexia.
So where I've come to over the years is being very conservative and supportive with medication for attention. What that means is, you know, too many times people throw medicine at any situation right away. And it could be like a dyslexia without an attention issue, but it's related to the learning. And, you know, it's like, let's just try medicine. So I do believe in a thoughtful process of looking at what's going on, the various things that are going on, and then determining with other accommodations intervention, if we still think that there's an attentional piece that is having a significant impact on the child's learning output and then identity, I am I'm supportive of medication trials. That's the other thing we like to say, because it feels like such a big thing for so many, is it's a trial. Mm-hmm. And yes, just to put it out there, our stimulants, for example, overprescribed is ADHD, overdiagnosed, generally speaking? I think yes. However, can they change a person's life for the better when with an accurate diagnosis and the right medicine? 100%. Because when you have a child who can't pay attention, is getting negative feedback, is getting poor grades, is having underachievement for them, and it goes to them being able to lock in, to focus, to bring their talents to bear and get positive feedback from the world, helps tremendously with identity development and their trajectory.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Virginia is asking for some resources. And again, we're going to, of course, post your contact information, Dr. Dan, at the end of the show, as well as any resources that you have we've shared in the chat. She's asking specifically, what are some books we can give to high school kids that can help them understand their own issues, resources geared towards that age range? Do you have any suggestions?
You know, one place to look is so that is actually the publisher of my latest book, Free Spirit Publishing. They have a lot of books geared towards kids for all of the different learning challenges. Because you know, the issues can be varied and different. So I would say that's one recommendation, is to go to their website at Free Spirit Publishing. It really depends. You know your child, and you have to pick what sort of voice you think will speak to them the most, and what is the issue you think they will resonate with the most, because, you know, the windows are really small in terms of the chances sometimes to have them pick up something to read, particularly when they don't really like to read a lot of the times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's see. And also, high school related, Carol is asking, how can you convey the idea that a high schooler needs a scribe, someone to be a note taker, kind of as an accommodation, or a reader, either audiobooks or someone helping them to read the text? There seems to be a denial that a bright kid who can compensate may never read a book cover to cover, nor take a 4-hour test. What are some suggestions for getting accommodations, modifications?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because you have to generally have some sort of data, diagnosis, documentation to open up that conversation. And I know where I think we're getting to is, even when, if you get that, you have a child who's performing well enough by the school's eyes. So it's difficult. What I will say is, you keep trying. Mm-hmm. And know that there is hope in college, because colleges are giving these accommodations away, whereas generally middle and high schools are not. And they're trying, they're just not giving these away, and they're not giving them to a lot of kids who actually deserve them. So sometimes you're just trying to do whatever you can on the outside to support your student who's not getting what they need on the inside, while looking ahead to a place that is really going to support their growth and learning.
Good advice. Another high school student, a ninth grader, Wikluna. My dyslexic daughter is now in ninth grade high school. She doesn't want much help, which is fine, but her test scores aren't great. Do you have any advice on how to help her learn to study? So again, there's flip side now where, you know, they're teenagers and they don't want that attention. So what are some suggestions for that?
Yeah, this is a tough one, because on the one hand you have identity, let's say mental health adjustment. And on the other hand, you have learning profile, perhaps getting in the way, or lack of understanding or lack of support getting in the way of their true potential and output. So I think in taking a step back as a parent, I'd be thinking about, you know, how does my child feel about themselves? Are they satisfied? Are they satisfied because of their personality type and they actually aren't an overachiever and they're into a whole bunch of things and they're not getting caught up in the grade rat race, which can actually be quite healthy. However, are they just settling because they have a challenge they're not willing to look at, and therefore they're just saying, average is fine, I can't do much better, or I don't care. And then it's trying to see, like, what would be your leverage by trying to introduce them to a concept of, hey, here's this coach that is actually, we heard, super cool and can help you learn some study habits. And this helps some other people we know. I think you just have to be really kind of careful to bring them along in a way where they don't feel there's something wrong with them for how they're doing, because then that sometimes can be perceived as being critical as a parent, mm-hmm. And having high expectations. On the other hand, if you know that they're dissatisfied, it's trying to find a way to get in with something that they care about and bring a link to something they care about to provide that resource to them. And sometimes it just takes a little time. And I've seen that, we've seen this a lot. It's not until 10th grade that you might get a child to step in, or 11th. I know that feels like a long time, but if we think of that at development again, people are ready at different times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That makes sense, I guess, with just development. I remember middle school. I mean, that invisible audience kind of peaks at that time where everybody's watching me and I don't want to be different. That middle school, 7th, 8th, 9th grade. That's good to know that, you know, might be some maturity that can help that issue as well.
We over all the years, I have really seen, especially with boys, they're just so vulnerable in 9th grade and kind of shut down to things. And by second semester of 10th grade, maturity has kicked in a lot of times, that they start to see things a little bit differently. And the other thing I would say with any of these issues that are starting to come up is, you know, with our teens, with our kids, period, but especially our teens, we really have to problem solve together and kind of see what their side of it is and what our side of it is, or the school's side, you know, and kind of present the problem and brainstorm solutions together. Because one solution to this test-taking issue could be that you study with, you know, your child, but another could be a coach, or another could be a study group, or, you know, just to dialogue together all different kinds of solutions and see how can we together find a solution to try and see how you feel about it, how it works for you, so that they feel like they have a stake in the process.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. Okay, a couple more. We have Claire checking in from Hawaii, and she says, I am dyslexic and I'm seeing signs of dyslexia in my youngest daughter. We work constantly on reading sight words and letter recognition and sounds. The teacher say she's doing fine, but I am apprehensive. The teachers seem bothered by my concern. She is in first grade and want to get a handle on this before it hurts her education. Am I wrong for feeling concerned?
No.
No.
Right.
Let's all say it at the same time. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
No.
You're probably spot on. Because we know that it runs in families and you know it personally and you're seeing it in your daughter. So it's common for education to say, well, we learn reading between first and third grade and therefore we have some late bloomers and that's how this stuff gets delayed. And your daughter's probably, you know, smart and just keeping up well enough. Ideally you can get, if the school's not going to do testing, you can find private testing. You also can look for multisensory intervention. And I just have to say this, it's like so hard when you're doing it on the side and you're improving the skills before anyone's willing to test, because it increases the skills. And if you're dyslexic, you're dyslexic. But if your skills keep going up, it's harder for people to show you're dyslexic, particularly in the school environment. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Ideally, get testing as a baseline and then follow up with multisensory intervention. If testing is not possible, I would still start with multisensory intervention. And Jill, I'm thinking you have thoughts about that as well.
Well, definitely moms know, and you need to trust your gut on that. And in terms of the school, you're right. Most of the time there isn't anything at those very lower grades. Kids don't qualify for help until, you know, they're showing about 2 years lagging in their skills. And so it is very difficult. I would certainly, though, try to educate the teacher. Just sit down and have a conversation and say, hey, you know, I know she looks like she's doing fine. And I just want to share with you, you know, some background about where she is or what I see happening, or, you know, just, I think we have to keep going in and trying to help educate the teachers, because the teachers aren't really getting that feedback from other places. So I think we have to, you know, as parents, advocate for our kids and educate, you know, those working with them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just a couple more. I mean, this is so great and it's so valuable. Norma's asking, how can I see if my boy has dyslexia? My boy is autistic and he is on medication for ADHD, but he still has trouble reading and writing. And he needs a lot of help. So, how can she, you know, is that additional testing?
It is additional testing. And I think, and you could go through your school, what tends to happen, particularly when a child, is on the autism spectrum, is people focus on autism mm-hmm. as being responsible for a host of other challenges. And sometimes they're not focused on the learning, or they might say it's because of the behavioral rigidity or some of the emotional dysregulation or some of the executive functioning challenges. And that's why the learning might be lagging, as opposed to identifying a learning disability or a dyslexia. So I would go back to your school or, you know, the organization that your child is a part of to pursue testing for specifically a learning disability.
If you are hopping on late or you're typing furiously and you want to continue the conversation, a place that you can go is our private Facebook group, Mom Squad. You're welcome to join. It's a community of parents of kids and teens with learning and attention challenges. You just need to request to join. We'll provide the link in the chat, or you can go to Facebook groups and search the keywords SLC Mom Squad to request to join. I also post guides, which are full of resources. So I have a dyslexia guide, and it has resources and strategies and, you know, just all kinds of kind of rabbit holes for you to go down with dyslexia if you want to educate yourself further.
Be sure to check out his new book, Bright Complex Kids, Supporting Their Social Emotional Development, and his parenting podcast, Parent Footprint. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. This is LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning disabilities, dyslexia, and auditory and attention challenges. Stoll Learning Centers are open for both on-site and remote sessions and evaluations. We work with children and adults doing targeted brain training to permanently eliminate struggles associated with dyslexia, auditory processing, and other learning differences so that students can become independent learners and thrive in school. If you would like a free consultation for yourself or your child, give us a call or visit our website at stowellcenter.com. Thank you again, Dr. Dan. Thank you all of you who have been sharing, subscribing, asking questions, and joining us each week.